Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back. And now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact.
Hey everyone, happy Thanksgiving. I am still super sick. I'm actually feeling a lot better, but I sound like hell. But here we are. The show must go on. I'm going to try not to cough while I talk to you today. So a couple things. I'm going to bring back the Q&A episodes. You guys liked those. So if you go to the show notes, you will find a link to drop your questions. And if you don't want to go to those show notes, it's just kateanthony.com/questions. And you'll find a form there. You can drop them in. And then I'll bring you some Q&A episodes in the coming weeks and months. The other thing that I want to let you know is that Grit and Grace is rock and rolling. It's going so well, and the community is so strong and beautiful. And if you would like to join it, I would love to have you. The women would love to have you join us as well. And so head on over to my website, kateanthony.com/coaching, and you can read a lot more about Grit and Grace. And now for today's episode, I have with me Sean Galanos, who you know on Instagram as The Love Drive. He is a love coach. He's the host of The Love Drive podcast and an online course creator. He teaches intimacy and communications tools for better relationships and more love. I adore Sean. I've been following him on Instagram forever. We really had a ball recording this episode. I think we did more flirting, really, than anything else. But, hey, man, when you're talking about communication tools for better relationships and more love, flirting is number one. Good God, we don't do enough of it in our worlds in the United States. So without further ado, here is my flirty conversation with Sean Galanos.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Kate.
Thanks for coming on. I'm so excited about this conversation.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So one of my favorite things about you, I just laugh. I watch your videos on Instagram. I laugh so hard because you do what I do in the direct communication, the world of direct communication. How do I tell my so-and-so that so-and-so, you say so-and-so?
And I want to recognize that that's not so easy.
Well, that's what I want to talk. Right. Exactly. Why is it so hard?
Well, it's easy for us, right? Because we're not in the situation. We're not staring at someone and about to disclose something that might hurt their feeling or that we might experience rejection from.
Right.
Right. And so that's why it's scary, right? So it's a lot easier. I mean, every time I post something, someone says easier said than done. And I go, I know. And also, most things in life that are worth doing aren't easy.
Right.
It doesn't come easy. So we have to sort of motivate or invite or sort of, you know, stretch our comfort zones to do things that, you know, is going to meet our needs or lead to a more fulfilled existence.
Yes. I 100% agree with that. I also think that, you know, and just in case I wasn't really clear with the so-and-so, what we're talking about is really clear, direct communication. Like, how do I tell someone that I want to take our relationship to the next level? And Sean's answer is always, hi, I'm really interested in taking our relationship to the next level. Right. And that is so hard. It is hard, of course, when you're face to face, but also, and I think you said something about this on your website that for you, and for me, like it took a lot of fucking therapy to get there. It took a lot of fucking therapy to get to a place where you recognize where you're able to be that direct, right? Because I'm not just scared that this person is in front of me. I'm also scared by everything else,
my history, my trauma, my this, my that.
We show up to the table with all sorts of stuff. And I think it's more than just therapy. I think it's a lot of experience, right? So for me growing up, I sort of realized it kind of all started with me wanting to have more sex, right? And I was thinking to myself, there must be an easier way than pretending like I want more than just sex to get sex. And we're talking like, this is me at like 18, 19, 20 years old, right? Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I started just asking people like, hey, would you like to have sex? And that's a scary proposition because they might say no. But what you get from the experience of doing something hard is you start to get like a plethora of how are people going to react? Mm-hmm. Some of them are going to say yes. Some are going to say, I'm not sure. And some of them are going to say no. But what you learn from all of this is that you are going to be okay, regardless of what the answer is. So if you ask someone if you tell your person, your partner, that you want to take it to the next level, and they say, yeah, I'd love to, that's great. Obviously, that's the best case scenario. You know, we don't really have to prepare ourselves for that. Though there are some people that are scared of actually getting what they want. Right.
100%.
So they're not going to ask. Then you might have someone say, well, what does the next level actually mean? And then it's like they're putting your feet to the fire a little bit, and you have to actually describe the kind of relationship that you want. Or they're going to say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, or that's not something that I want. And then you have to deal with the rejection, the hurt, the abandon, the, oh, this feels a lot like how, you know, my dad treated me growing up. And you have to deal with that sort of experience. But the more you ask, the more you get the experience. And ultimately, you figure out that regardless of the answer, you're going to be okay.
That's right. And you're going to get the answer that you need. Because if you want to take a relationship to the next level and you're not asking for it, then you're not getting it. And if you ask for it and they say no, then that wasn't your person to begin with, right?
I would much rather know that they're not into what I want sooner rather than later. I think that the hope that people have that I've had is that if I wait long enough, they will eventually want what I want, or they will ask. And then I don't have to be courageous and I don't have to risk rejection.
I see this with friends and with clients who are trying to have really hard conversations in their relationships, in their marriage, you know, around co-parenting or around division of labor, things like that, right? And if you have never practiced being direct and having direct communication on like the easy things, right? The more simple things like, hey, do you want to have sex? Which may not be easy, but it's a lot easier than we need to talk about the division of labor in our household because I'm feeling taken advantage of.
Yeah. Or the finances are unfair and, or, you know, whatever other sort of more complex issues that might come up.
Totally. Totally. Okay. So let's talk about modern dating and getting back out there, right? I mean, first of all, we hear all the time, like it's a shit show out there. Is it a shit show out there?
I don't know. I think that you have to be really careful of confirmation bias, right? So if you start thinking that it's a shit show out there, then every negative experience that you're going to have, you're going to say, see, I knew it was a shit show out there. I knew I shouldn't, I know I shouldn't be dating. I should just stay home. Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you want to be dating, then you have to put yourself out there. Right. If you just are coming off of a bad relationship and you just need some time to rest and recover, there is no rush to get back out there. Like reconnect with your desires, reconnect with your friends, with the things that made you happy, find yourself again. That's awesome, right? That is totally, and you could be happy single. You really, really can.
Absolutely.
But there are people that desperately want connection and partnership, and I identify with those people. I also love connection and partnership. And so you can't do that without putting yourself out there. And to view everything as a shit show is not helpful, right? I mean, what is probably more realistic is that, man, it can be really hard to date. Yeah. And at the same time, there are some lovely people out there.
Right.
They're just not super easy to identify. Mm-hmm. And so you do have to weed people out, and you do have to go on, you know, kind of boring dates, and hopefully you don't have to have too many bad experiences or somebody mistreats you or deceives you or catfishes you. That's really
rare. That's right. I mean,
I don't know. It's never happened to me, but I'm also a man dating women. From what I can see on my Instagram, there are people that have these experiences on a regular basis. Now, I don't know if that's because there's something inside of them or there's some unhealed trauma there. I don't really know what's drawing them to those kinds of people. But for the most part, I want to assume that being catfished is kind of rare. There are a lot of scammers out there, but there's a lot of scammers on Instagram. Like scammers going to scam Nigerian princess. We've been getting those in our email boxes forever. So don't be surprised if someone tries to scam you on a dating app. It's not personal, right? It's just, it happens. Right.
I mean, I know for me, like it's never happened to me. I have gone on tons of bad dates. I have gone on tons of, you know, questionable dates. I've gone on, you know, some maybe that were unsavory. But I think the longer you date, the more discerning you become, and you end up not going on all those dates.
Yeah. So the way people present, especially if you're meeting people online, the texting will be very indicative of the kind of person that they are, right? If they try to sexualize the conversation really early on, you know that person is looking for sex. And if you're looking for sex, great. You've identified them. Go for it. Have fun. If you're looking for something more serious and sex is not on the table early on in the mating process, which is also perfectly fine, then you now have some information about this person, right?
Yeah.
If they never ask you anything about yourself on the dating app, they're not going to suddenly just start asking you about yourself during the date, right? So don't be surprised if they show up pretty much how they were showing up before.
Yeah, this is great. I had a conversation. I'm going to tell you a story. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, 2 days ago on that, you know, I met on the dating app, whatever. And he very quickly wanted to move it to the telephone. And I was like, that's fine. You know, whatever. I usually like to go back and forth a little bit more on the app and then move to the phone. But I was like, that's fine. Whatever.
The phone being a phone call or a
phone call, a phone call.
Okay. Bold. Right. I like it.
And that's, I was like, okay, right. Listen, and also we sort of moving this along a little, you know, just more information, quicker, fine, less time wasted. So we get on the phone and it was a monologue. It was a monologue. I mean, I literally think I said two things. And then at the end he was like, so I would really like to meet you. You know, this has been great. Like,
what did you say?
It's been great for you. I said, oh yeah. And then he said, here's what we should do. Why don't you just take some time to think about it? And then you can just text me, hey, Kevin, like, yeah, let's get together. Or, hey, Kevin, actually, I don't think. And he's like giving me the script for how I need to. And I was like, okay, that sounds great. Sure.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
So of course I didn't text him. And then he texted me this morning and was like, you know, hey, if you'd like to grab that delicious cup of coffee this weekend, let me know. I would enjoy meeting you for. And I was like, how do you know that you would enjoy meeting me? You didn't let me even talk. So I wrote back and I said, no, thank you.
Well, that's very nice of you. And also, I have to admit, I think that's a little bold to give out your phone number to someone that you don't know. I think what I've always suggested people to do is to keep it on the app until you meet and then decide whether you want to share your phone number, because then that comes with other stuff.
No, I mean, it's true. And also I usually don't. This one I was like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. But I do like to have a phone call before meeting, because I like to hear the back and forth and the dynamic before meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
does it weed out?
Well, for me, it weeds out whether you're going to ask me questions about myself. You know, does our chemistry flow?
Yeah. Is there a back and forth.
Yeah.
Also, some people are really awkward on the phone. I mean, the younger generations would be appalled at the idea of having a phone call. I think a lot of people do video calls also, a little quick FaceTime, just 5 minutes. Yeah. I've never done it.
I haven't either.
but people do it. So we're two people suggesting something that we've never done, but people do it a lot.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, oh God, that's like a whole, especially for a woman. It's like, oh, I gotta put my makeup on. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me get me out of my pajamas.
Or maybe you just do it in your PJs and say, hey, I'm in my PJs. I'm not doing my makeup. Just FYI, you know, what you see is what you get.
That's kind of bold though. I kind of like it.
I mean, that's what we're doing here. We're weeding people out with our boldness.
That's right. If you can't handle me at my worst, ugh, that bullshit.
Right.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Okay, so dating after divorce.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about like, if you're not ready, and people talk about like, let's, you know, finding yourself and reconnecting with yourself. What does that mean to you?
That means that I think in relationship, it's really easy to sort of blend your personality and your desires with that of your partner. Mm-hmm. And you start you know, maybe not calling some of your friends as much, and you start spending time doing other stuff, and you sort of maybe don't have time. If you've raising kids, you don't have time to do the stuff that used to sort of light you up, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think finding some of that and also strengthening your support system. Because when you leave a relationship, that person tends to be a pretty significant part of your support system, and they no longer can be part of that support system for the most part. I know some people that break up and have really amicable breakups, and they're able to still be there for each other in some capacity. But I think for the most part, it's better to find other ways of getting support and also feeling comfortable and feeling loved and loving and excited about life, right? And so I think that's what it is. It's like finding the things that light you up, that you mm-hmm. actually enjoy doing. Because you might have done a bunch of things that you didn't really enjoy doing. You didn't mind doing them, but you were doing them for your partner. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty common in relationships. And so this is really a time to be selfish and to see like, okay, what brings me joy? How can I start building the kind of life that I'm really proud of before I start looking for the external validation, acceptance of another person.
Yeah. And that's really hard, especially, you know, so many of my listeners have been in abusive relationships. And I think there's the losing of yourself, or like the blending of yourself that happens in relationships. And then there's the losing of yourself that happens when you've been abused, when you've been sort of torn down to nothing. And you want that validation, right? I think it's really valid that you want to find external validation because you've had so little of it.
We all need it. We all need external validation. So I'm not saying don't get it. I'm saying maybe don't jump to the next partner to get it, right? So get it through your therapist, through your friends, through your family members, through community groups, through activities that you like, right? Through meditation, through yoga, through exercise, through all that kind of stuff.
Right.
You can get it. It doesn't have to come from a romantic partner. For some reason, the romantic partner validation just feels better, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I always say is I'm like, go date. I think dating is an incredible playground for getting to know yourself, but don't get into a new relationship. And for some of us, that's really hard, right? Like, I'm not the best dater. I'm a relationship person. So for me, dating is like, just like playing the field is like, whoa, what?
Yeah, I can relate. I'm really good at like 1, 2, 3 dates or let's be together. That's like where I play.
The
couple months thing, like that just doesn't work for me. But I do think that you can learn a lot about yourself and what you're looking for by going on dates.
Yes.
Right. Because you realize like, oh, wow, this is like, this person sees me in a way that I've never been seen before. That feels great. And we're not compatible for all these other reasons. But let me grab that and put that on the things of, you know, the values that I find important. Right. I want to be seen. I love to be respected. I like when people ask me questions. Right. So you start to build the kind of person, you know, that's going to line up with your values.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, if you can, because, you know, what tends to happen, right, is that we see that one thing, especially when we're just getting out and especially if we've been abused, right? You see that one thing and you make up that that is the, you know, that you're in love with them or that like, that's all that they are. And you're just like, oh, everything else, like, I don't see any of that stuff, right? but that's the danger, right? Is keeping your wits about you. Keeping your sort of discerning executive function brain online as you're going through the process.
I love it. I love it. I just feel like it's so hard to do sometimes.
Sean was like,
No, I get it. I get it. I also want to do that. And I actually sort of struggle with the other thing sometimes. I'm too rational, right? I'm too rational.
Oh, interesting.
And so I'll look at the list and sort of see, you know, you fit all of this, but then something else crucial will be missing, like passion or chemistry or romance. And I'll go, okay, well, this, you know, on paper, this is great. So let's just go for this, you know? So there's all sorts of different styles. Mm-hmm. And I just try to remember that every experience eventually will lead me to some sort of learning, some sort of teaching, right? Even if it ends up being a mistake or not ideal, hopefully I'm walking away with something.
All right, I'm getting myself back online. I'm like learning about myself. I'm grounding myself and I want to start. How do you discern? This is a really important thing that people don't talk about a lot. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the difference between a red flag and a trigger.
Uh-huh.
Right? When you're dating someone new, like how do you know? What is the difference?
So is the question that like a trigger is an opportunity for us to look inward at why is this coming up based on my past experience? And a red flag is actually something that we need to pay attention to. I don't think it really matters that much because for me, I think the red flags are an opportunity to connect, right? So if there's a red flag that comes up, give me an example of a red flag.
I mean, a sort of benign one, I suppose, would be they're rude to the waiter, but maybe they show a sign of jealousy. Maybe they show a sign of possessiveness really early on. Maybe they show, they disparage their ex.
Yeah. So any of those examples, you could actually talk about them. You could say, hey, look, I noticed that you are speaking like really harshly towards your ex. And I'm just kind of curious, like, what's going on there for you, right? So there's an opportunity to deepen your understanding of what's happening rather than to make this judgment call inside, you know, internal judgment without any conversation and being like, you know what? This guy sucks. He's disparaging towards his ex and he is not right for me and I'm going to leave. And sometimes that might actually be the right call, right? Because we don't actually know. But if he goes, hey, you know what? You're totally right. I'm still pretty upset at her. You know, she did some stuff in our relationship that wasn't ideal. I obviously played a part in it, but I'm still pretty hurt and I'm still dealing with that with my therapist, right? That's one answer.
That's a great answer. I'll be right? like, okay, great.
Yeah,
awesome.
Fuck her. Yeah, exactly.
or like maybe call me in a couple of months when you've worked through more of that, right? Because it's still hot for you.
Yeah. And you could say, do you actually honestly think that you're in a good place to be dating right now if you still have this stuff? And he could say, yeah, you know what? You might be right. And let me talk to my therapist about that. And let's sit on it for a couple of weeks and I'll get back to you, right? That's a great response.
Yeah.
We love this guy, but we want to date. Now we're like, actually,
now I want to date. Now I'm like, wait a minute.
You're right. Or if it's the guy who's like, yeah, she was, you know, trash from the beginning and you'd talk about her like that if you met her. Okay. Now we know where we're at, right? Mm-hmm. So this is actually not answering your question. I sidestepped the question.
No, I think it's great.
This is how you evaluate red flags, right? This is how you evaluate red flags. And some of them are going to be deal breakers, right? Like, I hate kids. Okay. Well, I have kids, so this is not going to work, right? Or like, I'm allergic to cats. That's kind of a tough one because there are pills that you can take for that. But the triggers, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Cause it's like they may be doing something that triggers you, but you know, the way I think of triggers is like, I have a wound that's like an open sore. And if you bump on it, it's going to hurt. But if you bump someone who doesn't have a wound in that place, it's not going to hurt them. Right. So, you know, it's still my wound. So yeah. that's not your fault. Right.
I think the answer is, the answer is always going to be bring it up. How do they respond?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really sorry. I had no idea. You know, thank you for sharing that with me. I'll be more mindful in the future. You know, now I know that this is kind of a sticky spot for you or like a hurt spot for you. Mm-hmm. Or they're like, wow, that's like fucking lame. You know, that's unfortunate.
Not my problem.
Like, not my problem. Yeah, you should probably talk to somebody about that.
Right. Yes. So, then you learn more about, because all of this, everything that you're saying is like every conversation is an opportunity to learn more, right? Because you may see a red flag, but then when you turn it over, either it's still red, it's like glaring red, or it's like, oh no, actually that's pretty green.
It's part of a pride flag. It's all full colors. I learned that from my therapist a long time ago. He said, the more you communicate, the more they communicate. For the most part, right? I mean, some people, they're so shut down that you communicate, they won't be able to talk. And then that gives you some information about whether you want to continue being in a relationship with someone like that. Because that might be really hard if you are the kind of person who wants to connect on an emotional level and you find yourself with someone who is shut down or just not really, doesn't have that part of themselves developed. That might be really hard, right?
Yeah.
So, but for the most part, when you talk about something, they're going to have to respond. And no response is also a type of response.
I love that. You and I are on the same page about communication. Like, it's literally all about communication, no matter what.
It simplifies everything, doesn't it?
It really does.
Then you don't have to be in your head trying to figure everything else or everything out on your own. You could bring the other person into it.
And we spend so much time. Like, what did he mean by this? He said this. And what did he mean? I don't know. Ask him.
Well, it's like what we were talking about at the beginning about, you know, having these hard conversations with people where we might not have had the experience, right? We're just not used to doing it. If you're starting over, this is a great opportunity for you to start with more communication, more clarity than you're used to, because what happens when you do that is you set the bar. This is how this relationship is going to go. We are going to talk about stuff.
Right. That's right. That's right. If you're going to be with me, I mean, certainly if you're going to date me or you, Sean, like we're going to be direct about it.
That's it. There's no other way around it.
There's literally no other way.
And if you're not into it, cool. That's great. Thank you for letting me know. This is, you know, this is not a good fit.
Yeah.
I wish you the best of luck.
Fear of intimacy. Uh-huh. Like what does that actually mean? We say that people have a fear of intimacy. I know you've said that in the past, you know, you had a fear of intimacy. And I guess for different people, I guess it's different for everybody. But I wonder what's underneath it, right? Because are we really scared of being intimate? Are we really scared of being close to somebody? Or are we scared of being hurt again, right? Like what are the walls? What are they made of?
Yeah, I think we're scared of, I mean, intimacy is closeness, right? Emotional, physical, spiritual, intellectual. The closer we can get to people on multiple different levels, the more intimacy we're going to build together. Also, the more we risk being hurt, right? Because someone, you know, when we're opening up to somebody, we are being vulnerable. We are showing them parts of ourselves that we don't show everybody, mm-hmm. right? And we shouldn't really just be wide open all the time because we don't know who we're opening up to, right?
Right.
And so we reserve that for like the inner circle.
Right.
And there's no one closer in the inner circle often than your intimate partner, right? Your romantic partner. And so you open yourself up to a level that no one ever really gets to see. And so you feel exposed and you feel vulnerable. And then if they leave you, that can feel like a devastating amount of rejection. And like that person saying, you have opened up to me and I do not like what I see.
Mm.
And so, yeah, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
That's really scary. And it, of course, it's probably, you know, connected to our childhood and our attachment stuff and our wounds and our experiences. And I think it is, you know, intensely difficult to open yourself up to really truly be seen at that level. And so I'm not surprised when people are scared of intimacy, or if even I am scared of intimacy, especially if you're with someone who might not have the track record yet to show you that they are trustworthy. You know, or they are deserving of your openness,
mm-hmm.
right? That's why I caution people to open up slowly over time.
Yeah.
This whole wide open right from the get-go for me is a red flag.
Mm.
You know, it's
why is that a red flag for you?
Well, because first of all, you don't know me. So you don't know that I'm a safe recipient for all of you. And second of all, it feels inappropriate because, you know, if you're wide open from the get-go, I haven't given you consent, right? I'm not a willing participant in this openness. Hopefully the openness is reciprocal.
Right.
Right. And if someone's just like, oh, well, I'm a open book. I wear my heart on my sleeve and that's just who I am. You just deal with it. And it's like, okay, cool. I'm not into it. Maybe you should find another heart on their sleeve kind of person. Then that will be reciprocal.
It'll also be a train wreck. But
maybe, I don't know, maybe not, maybe it's the perfect fit, match made in heaven. I don't know.
Yeah.
But for me, I open up fairly slowly, but I'm also not, I mean, there are some things that I open up fairly quickly about that, but they aren't things that you can use to hurt me.
Mm.
You know, like the fact that I have herpes, I got herpes like a year ago. I talk about this often. This is something that people would have a really hard time disclosing because they might feel rejected or whatever, but like, you can't hurt me by saying like, ew, you have herpes. I'd be like, yeah, big deal. You know?
Right.
So
right,
there's a difference. Right. There's a difference in between like sharing some stuff and then sharing other stuff that's more vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh shit. I was going to say something about that before you,
before I drop the herpes bomb.
Before you drop the herpes bomb. Jesus. Sean.
Hey everybody, if you have herpes, it's okay. Just
it's
join
totally
the
fine.
Billions of us.
There are billions of us. And also, it's important to disclose that. Like, you know, you have to.
It's part of the burden that you must now bear.
Mm-hmm.
As a sexually active adult. That's all it really is.
I like the idea about it being the opening up process being reciprocal. I mean, certainly someone might open that door a little bit more, right? And, you know, first or whatever, but and as long as you're sort of keeping right that discerning part of your brain online, that I also very much struggle with, you'll notice, right? Oh, there is this feedback loop. There is reciprocity in how we are unfolding.
Someone has to go first, for sure.
Right.
Right. And right. You know, you can't play chicken. Someone's got to go first. But if you're always going first and they're not disclosing, then that's something to pay attention to. That's hopefully your discerning brain is still online.
Right. Because that's a red flag.
Well, yeah. And also, the discerning brain goes out the window when you fall hard for someone.
Yeah.
And so falling hard for someone is also something to pay attention to.
Say more about that. Well, like what
are you falling in love with? What are you falling for or into? And also, you know, is this a repeat of an old pattern that feels familiar?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I've heard it said, and I think this is true, that the brain actually doesn't like know the difference between excitement and anxiety. And very often what you're feeling is anxiety, that this person is actually mirroring some kind of trauma. But we feel like, oh, I'm excited, I've got like butterflies, and your brain is actually like, no.
Terrified.
But the message just isn't quite getting right, because it's an amygdala response, but it's just translating perhaps incorrectly.
Well, and on the flip side of that, you know, if you're newly out of a relationship and you are scared of getting back out there, maybe it's not anxiety. Maybe it's just a little bit of excitement about the fact that you're about to meet total strangers.
Yeah.
With the hopes of maybe making out with one of them, right? Oh, that's cool, but also a little scary.
Yeah.
You gotta make out. Is the make out good, you know?
That needs to be assessed, I think, early. What do you think about kissing on the first date?
I've been moving away from the kiss on the first date. You know, sometimes I'll wait 2-3 dates. I really want to figure out, do I actually want to kiss this person?
Right.
Do I want to see them naked? I ask myself these questions, right? When I go on these dates. All right, here we go. Here's the question to figure out whether you want to continue dating somebody. Okay. This is the question that you ask yourself. Do I like them enough to see them again? That's it. That's the only question you really have to ask yourself. And if they're kind, okay, if they're unkind and disrespectful, you probably aren't going to like them enough to see them again, right? So hopefully, as a baseline, we're looking for people who are kind and respectful. That's sort of a baseline. I want at least that for everybody.
Yeah.
And then do I like them enough to see them again? Do I enjoy spending time with them? Was it fun? Did they ask me questions? Did we enjoy ourselves? Was it a little weird? Okay, that's fine. But was it still good, you know?
Yeah.
And then do I want to kiss this person? Not do I want to kiss to signify that they like me.
That's exactly what I was about to say, right? It's like, and also like discerning, like, okay, do I like them
right
enough to see them again?
Yeah.
Not like, do I think they like me? Like, does he like me? Does
Who
he like
cares?
Me? Does he like me? Right?
Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They will let you know if they like you. Mm-hmm. You know, if they decline going on another date with you, then you'll know that they didn't like you enough to go on a second date or third or whatever. And on that note, please try not to take everything so personally. If someone doesn't want to go on a date with you, it doesn't mean you're a bad person or you're undesirable, you're unattractive. You are just not a good fit for them. That's all it means.
Right.
Right. You're Hawaiian pizza and they don't like Hawaiian pizza.
Do you like Hawaiian pizza, Sean?
I don't mind Hawaiian pizza. I won't order it, but if it's there, like, I mean, I think when I was younger, I liked Hawaiian pizza with ranch. I won't go out.
Oh my God. I know. Wow. See,
I got some weird taste. I'll tell you that, Kate.
Wow. Hawaiian pizza with ranch.
Yeah. So if someone rejects you, try not to take it so personally, even though people will say, well, it is personal. They don't like me. And it's like, okay, you can choose to see it that way, or you could just choose to see it as this isn't a good fit.
Right. Right.
That's a lot easier on the soul, by the way.
It so is. My therapist used to say, God, you know, you're so busy taking their temperature, so busy trying to figure out if they like you, that you're forgetting to take your own temperature. Do you like this person?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, no.
You have to ask yourself this, you know, at every step of the way. Do I want to kiss them? Do I want to see them naked? Do I want them to see me naked? Do I want to touch them? Do I want to move in with them? Do I want to go on a vacation with them? Like, it's more about what do I want? And here's the best thing. This could feel a little selfish, right? And people are like, well, what about them? What if everybody just figured out what they wanted and were responsible for their desires? And then all we had to do was find people where the desire matches.
Yeah.
Then everybody's taken care of.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
There's a great book called Slow Sex by Diane Richardson, not the founder of One Taste in San Francisco, the weird orgasmic meditation cult. Yeah. Yeah. Something Ooh. for you all to look up. But a different
Definitely Diane, looking it up.
Different Diana Richardson, who wrote a book called Slow Sex. And the whole one of the premises is that in sex, let's just focus on our desires. And as long as both partners are doing that and only focusing on what feels good for them, then you're going to have a good sexual experience.
So that's interesting, because I would have thought also the opposite also, right? If I am focused on, if you're each focused on pleasing the other,
sure.
Right? Aren't we
that's
both
your
gonna
book's
have
premise? Sex after divorce, pleasing the other.
Listen, but what the fuck do I know? But no, I kind of like the other one better. I like Dana Richardson better.
It's a little selfish. It's a little selfish. A little weird. But if you know that the other person is also doing what feels good to them, then you can't go wrong, right?
That's right. That's right.
Again, esoteric topics, a little deep, neo-tantric.
That's my jam. That's the deep and esoteric is my jam. Well, since we're already there, let's talk about sex.
Nice.
Yes.
Good transition.
You even have a course on sex.
Yep. I haven't done it in a while. I haven't hosted it in a while, but I did it a couple years ago. It's still available if you want it. You can just go and buy the recording.
I mean, first of all, what are your thoughts on, okay, you're dating, you're actually looking for a relationship,
sure,
right? So what are your thoughts on timing of sex? Do you have one? Do you think?
Yeah, I really dislike any sort of timing, you know, guidelines.
Yeah.
Okay. The best guideline is, do I want to, and do they want to, right? Mm-hmm. And so can we line up for that? Mm-hmm. I will say that if you have a history of sleeping with people early on and them losing interest, you might consider trying waiting a little bit. And if you have a history of waiting so long that people lose interest, then you might want to try speeding it up a little bit. Of course, you have to, as long as you're
in
comfortable,
your comfort
right?
zone.
In your comfort zone. In your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the timeline to me, like I've had girlfriends where we waited. I'm one of my exes, we waited 8 months. Yeah.
Good Lord.
I mean, she was in a relationship with somebody else.
Okay.
It was an open relationship.
Okay.
But the deal was that she wasn't allowed to sleep with me for quite some time until they got comfortable enough, you know, her partner. And so we waited 8 months and then we were in a fantastic relationship together. I've had girlfriends where we slept together on the second date mm-hmm. and we had fantastic relationships together. Mm-hmm. Or I had my most recent girlfriend, we waited, I think it was like the eighth date. Mm-hmm. We didn't kiss until the third date. You know, yeah. There's no real rhyme or reason. I think, do you feel comfortable? Do you feel excited to have sex?
Yeah.
And also maybe try not to put so much pressure on the encounter. Especially if it's your first time having sex with someone after your relationship ended.
Yeah.
You know, and we're talking about people who've been in marriages or relationships 10, 15, 20 years.
And maybe haven't had sex in years.
It's going to be awkward.
Yeah.
It might be awkward. It might be awkward.
It might also be fucking fantastic.
It might be the best thing ever because your partner was neglecting you sexually. And now you've mm-hmm. found some younger model who's all about pleasing you, or even an older model, whatever, regardless of the age of the model.
And I like the idea, bringing that, like, going into it, getting your needs met, right? Like going into it, pleasing yourself.
Yeah. What right? do I want to get out of this encounter?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's okay to go slow. Also, like, just because you're getting naked with someone doesn't mean you actually have to have sex with them.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Right. You could do like a massage exchange. You could just cuddle. You could just do some oral. Like, it doesn't have to go, like, quote unquote, all the way.
Mm-hmm.
You could reserve penetrative sex for later. Or maybe you're in a homosexual relationship or a lesbian relationship where there is no penetration. Like, you don't have to go through the, like, the heterosexual trope of, like, right. make out, we make oral out, penetration. Touch,
right. Yeah.
Pastrami sandwich or whatever, you know, like.
Roll over and snore.
Roll over and snore. Yeah. Hit your vape or something. I don't know.
Right. It used to be a cigarette. Now it's a vape. Also.
That's right.
Yuck.
Oh my God. A little mango cream after is nice.
Oh, is that a vape flavor?
Every flavor you could think of is a vape flavor. Strawberries and cream.
Hawaiian pizza with ranch.
Probably.
Probably. Gross. Yeah, I used to love to smoke a cigarette afterwards.
I know.
That was back in the day.
What about smoking on planes? That was fun.
Oh my God. Because there was a non-smoking section that wasn't, like, infiltrated.
In the back.
It was the best. The best.
Well, one thing I want to say about getting naked with someone is you might not feel comfortable about your body or how you look. And what I want to say is that most people are going to be just over the moon to have sex with you. And to see you naked. So if you're dating someone and they're, like, actively being nice to you and kind and respectful, and, you know, you're enjoying making out with them and they want to have sex with you, they're going to enjoy seeing you naked and having sex with you.
Wow. Right? I love that idea, because I've never really thought of it that way. Like, if they're already into you in all of these other ways, they've been imagining you without your clothes on. They're already, right? They're not. They want it. They want to see it.
They want to see it. And it's probably not perfection, right? Because that doesn't exist.
Whatever that means.
Well, we're just not 20 years old anymore. Okay. Right. You know, so love, bless. You know, it's funny. When I was 22, I was dating a 32-year-old, and she said, youth is wasted on the young.
100%.
And I didn't get it.
No, we don't get that till we're older.
I get it now.
That's the whole point. 100%.
I get it now. Just try to enjoy getting naked. It can be very vulnerable, but also it can be incredibly exciting to, like, take your clothes off for the first time with somebody.
Yeah.
Freeing experience.
And if you don't feel like it's a freeing experience, and if you're feeling, like, uncomfortable, then, like, it's okay to slow it down.
Slow it down, turn the lights off, jump underneath the blankets. People want rules, and there are no rules in this kind of thing. You know, do what you need to do.
I love it. Anything else that you want to tell people getting back out there?
Try to have fun. It's supposed to be fun.
It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fun. That I think you need to remember that it's supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be anxiety inducing all the time. Mm-hmm. A little bit of fear is fine. Meeting new people should be fun.
Yeah.
And if you're not having fun with someone, then that's a great indicator that they're not a good person to have fun with. And find someone to have fun with. Do it scared.
Ooh, say more.
Yeah. If you're a little scared, do it anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm not talking about, like, alarm bells scared.
Right.
Like, trigger warning scared, pushing through trauma scared.
Right.
But if you're a little anxious and you're a little fearful because you haven't done it in a while, and it's like, super new and just do it anyways.
It's kind of hotter, isn't it?
It can be hot. It could just be also a little awkward, and it's okay for it to be a little awkward. But yeah, I guess it's hot. I mean, fear. Yeah,
ask
fear
me,
is sexy.
Ask me when the last time I had sex, Sean.
When was the last time you had sex?
Everything's hot.
When was the last time you had sex?
Oh my God, I don't remember. Oh God. Yeah, I think pre-pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you scared of?
I'm not scared because I don't want sex, right?
Okay.
I'm not interested in sex. Like if I just wanted to have sex, I could do that.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm looking for, you know, my partner, my person. So sex is not the priority.
Okay.
I'm also menopausal. Like literally it's not a priority.
Right.
So like, it's not even like okay. Yeah. So I'm not afraid of anything. It's just not what I want. Right.
Yeah.
And so I haven't yet met someone that I want to do that with. That I want to get naked with.
That you want to undress in front of with the lights on, being vulnerable.
Oh my God, the lights on? Do they have to be?
Yeah, no, they don't. Yeah. You can do it. Okay. Just do it. Well, do it during the day and then you don't have to worry about the lights.
Then I don't have to worry about the lights.
There's no choice.
Yeah, I just haven't found that yet. And yeah, there is fear for me too in, I think I have a story around this. My listeners know this, right? I have a story around, you know, men in LA, and it's hard to find, in my experience so far, it is hard to find emotionally intelligent men who have really done the work, who have engaged in the kind of therapy that that I think is necessary to be in a long-term relationship with me, certainly. You know, I have a level of expectation of a partner that's pretty high. Yeah.
Well, people in our line of work often have elevated expectations about the kind of partners that we want.
Yeah.
Do you know John Wineland?
I do not.
Oh, he's like sort of a esoteric tantra guru.
Oh, okay.
And he does a lot of men's work. So you might consider hanging out outside of his retreats and meeting guys.
Done.
And he lives in LA.
John Wineland, you say? Yeah,
or, you know, once I start doing my retreats, you can come and hang out at the retreat, you know?
I would love to. I would love to. Do you work with men a lot, Sean?
I don't. 90% women. I know. I mean, I did a group. There was 100 people in my group. There was like 7 guys.
Right. This is the problem. This is the problem.
I know.
And people are like, who's doing the men's work? And everyone I know who wants to do the men's work ends up working with women because they're the ones who want to do the work.
Well, even people that do men's work, their audiences on Instagram are 50, 60, 70% women. You know, you really have to find the like performance junkies and optimization folks to find, like, I know. You wrinkled your nose. Kate wrinkled her nose.
I so wrinkled my nose because that just feels like I'm not into bro culture. So that, like, you know,
I feel like there's a good mix with maybe men that do yoga or meditate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Meditation retreats or meditation centers or yoga.
A lot of men do yoga.
A lot of
here
men do yoga.
In
yeah.
LA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of men do yoga.
Some of them are emotionally intelligent.
Some of them are.
Not all of them. Just so, like not all women who do yoga are emotionally.
Exactly. I guess I should, maybe I should be doing more yoga. Maybe that's what I need to be doing.
Yoga or just hanging out outside the yoga studio.
Yeah, right. I don't actually have to do it.
Exactly. That's been my move, you know, hang out outside of places.
Is that what you do?
That's what I mean. No, I don't know. What do? I go to, where do I meet people? I meet people online on Hinge. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have met my ex-girlfriends. I met 2 online. I met 1 at a sex party. So there's some, yeah, okay. Edgy. Yeah.
Very edgy. Okay.
And then I met 1 at Burning Man.
Okay.
And then I met 1 at a party. Actually, I meet them at parties or online.
Okay.
And that's my track record.
Parties and online.
I'm a gregarious guy, so I like going to parties and stuff.
Yeah.
Events, festivals.
Yeah. Festivals. That sounds like that's a lot for me. A
festival could be like a yoga festival.
Mm, okay. You know,
with like 100 people, not
right,
like Coachella or something.
Yeah, I would. Oh my God.
No. We have to broaden our you know, our understanding of the word festival.
My sense, my central nervous system just went.
No, but community events, I think, is a great place to meet people where there's new people kind of come in on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So dance events or, you know, ecstatic dance or there's all sorts of stuff to do. If you live in LA, there's stuff everywhere to do.
Yeah.
There are literally people everywhere. No matter where you live, there are people there that you could possibly date.
I remember when I first got single, when I first got divorced, and that was sort of the, like, everyone's like, grocery store, like everywhere, like they're everywhere. And I would go to my grocery store and I was like, you know, not unattractive. I was actually pretty hot when I first got divorced too. I was like, I was out there. I could not, like, nobody was checking me out. Nobody, I couldn't make eye contact with anybody. And then I realized that I literally live in the most married town in Los Angeles. I live in a town in Los Angeles where people go when they get married to have kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah. You got to go to, I don't know, where, Echo Park or where?
Yes, people... exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right. Hills or
Silver Lake.
Yeah. I'm in Eagle Feliz. Rock. Okay.
I'm in Eagle Rock, which is where all the hipsters from Silver Lake go when they get married and have kids. Echo Park. Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah, I just was one stop over.
Now you know. Go to the other Whole Foods.
Exactly, and go back to Rockin' Ralph's. There's, you know about Rockin' Ralph's?
No.
There's a Ralph's with a grocery store. And I think it's the Kroger chain. And there's one in Hollywood, I think it's on Sunset Boulevard, that's called Rockin' Ralph's. Cause like you go in there and it's like, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning and everybody's like coming home from the Viper Room and they're all fucked up and they're
cool.
Doing their grocery shopping. I saw like Lawrence Fishburne there. Like there's just, it's like a total, yeah, Rockin' Ralph's.
Yeah, go there.
That's maybe not my not people.
Maybe not at 3 a.m.
Maybe not at 3 in the morning.
We don't really know what our people is, you know, because like our type statistically like hasn't really panned out if we're single. So maybe try a different type. Yeah, 3 a.m. Viper Room returnee or whatever. You never know. Love works in mysterious ways.
I'll let you know how that one goes, Sean. Okay. I'll set my alarm. I'll have gotten like 6 hours of sleep at that point.
And yeah. You can go to yoga after. You can do an early meditation.
I can do like early morning yoga after my Rockin' Ralph's. I love it. I'll check back in with you on that.
Please do.
Sean, thank you so much for coming on. You're awesome. I just, yeah, so appreciate this conversation.
It was an honor.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.